Metro Access Subcommittee, February 22nd, 2017.
Don Scruggs, Assistant Director, Metro Access.
Stated before. before the committee as well, is that there's a help and assist, and if there are other methods or forms that need to be added, they will work to do so. That is the summarization of the last meeting.
Okay. With that, we will now have Ms. Stephanie Bourne, service monitor with the Office of Metro Access Service, give the outreach report.
Good afternoon. On January 26th, Ms. Fitzhugh, also a service monitor with Metro Access, and myself visited Delta Towers Senior Center to discuss the transition to the new conditional SmartTrip Metro Access cards. During our visit, we were able to clear up some confusion regarding the two different types of cards, as well as update customers on the most recent extension of the white card until March 1st. And Ms. Fitzhugh and I did a demonstration of how to use the PCA SmartTrip card at the ferry to mention in our last meeting how we were going to be using the conditional cards at Fairgate and how to use the PCA card. And we did a demonstration that afternoon. And we finally cleared up any confusion about when the cards would be distributed. And everyone, and those who had confusion about which card they would receive. Thank you.
Can I ask a question about that?
Go ahead.
Does that mean after March 1st, the white card we had for identification is not the one we will show to the drivers?
No, after March 1st, you would be using the red, white, and blue SmartTrip conditional card.
All right, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Next, there's been a little change in order of this agenda. We are going to do media service delivery provider. But before that, do we have a microphone yet to introduce people in the audience? Not yet? Okay. We'll do that when that happens. So first we're going to do media service delivery provider with First Transit. And after that, we're going to do the Michael Wilson Award since the award recipients are from that same company. So let us go on with the presentation with First Transit. If they can come up to the microphone up here. And before we do that, Charlie is situated. Introduce himself. All right. Charlie is here. He is from Montgomery County, Maryland. I'm a member of the board.
Christopher Colbert, Office of Eligibility.
All right. And Mr. Blake, can you introduce yourself?
Chris Blake, Metro.
All right. And our presenters here from First Transit, you can go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Paul O'Brien. I'm the Region Vice President for First Transit. And I have with me Shannon Borst, who's a Director of Operations for us. So we're going to talk a little bit about First Transit. We're a national provider of transit services in the United States. Our company began service in 1952. We operate multiple modes of transit nationwide, including fixed route, shuttle service, and ADA paratransit. In the Northeast, we operate approximately 20 facilities between D.C. and New Hampshire. And they vary in size from large to small transit agencies. For myself, I've been in the passenger transit industry for 25 years, the last 17, most specifically in paratransit services. In fact, a funny story, when I began in paratransit in 2000, I actually replaced Mr. Christian Kent at Laidlaw as the district manager of New Jersey, so I've known him for quite some time. Since that time, our service in the Northeast has grown quite a bit. Most of our contracts are free paratransit, and just to give you some examples of other services, New Jersey Transit, we've operated contracts there since 1996, and we currently operate 4 out of 5 regions. Hartford, Connecticut, we began in 2005 with about 600 trips a day, and we now average about 2,200 a day there. And most recently, in November, we began service in Philadelphia, FACEPTA, in Center City, Philadelphia, in November. So while we're national and fairly large in the Northeast, we also operate a number of services in Maryland, and that includes Metro Access, in Arundel County, where we operate about 30 vehicles, and Maryland MTA Baltimore, where we operate 170 vehicles, and we have a DD partner who operates 20 of those buses there. For Metro Access itself, we began operating in 2013. We're one of the service delivery providers, and we operate about 35% of the service. This average is probably between 2,500 to 2,700 trips a weekday, depending on the day. And our responsibilities are obviously the same as other providers, providing operators, vehicle maintenance, cleanliness, safety, fueling, and ensuring that we work to maintain the on-time performance for the location. We maintain 2 operating facilities for this contract. One is in Capitol Heights, Maryland, and one is in Gaithersburg. Capitol Heights has 164 vehicles. Gaithersburg has 85 vehicles that operate over there. As far as our operators, each operator, new operator, receives over 100 hours of training before entering revenue service. Additionally, each operator receives monthly training at our safety meetings and our safety training sessions. And really, they're designed to proactively address safety items on refresher training and to refresh policies and procedures so that our operators are aware of best practices and the best way to transport our passengers. An example is this: in January, we conducted what we call one-on-one turning maneuver clinics. So what this involves is setting up cones and running the drivers through skills to make tight turns to really see how close in they can realize they are, how far they are from other objects, and make sure that they're knowing how to use their mirrors properly. For maintenance, part of our maintenance program, we're proud to say that both of our shops are ASE Blue Seal shops. So that means that the technicians are certified and we've achieved the Blue Seal of excellence. Last year we implemented what we call a paperless shop, and what that is each technician gets a tablet, and they do their work orders on the tablet. They can also, their work orders can be printed out, but the goal of it really is to improve productivity so that they don't have to write down every part they use. They can just select the PM package, put it right onto the work order, and the goal of that is to save time so they spend more time working on vehicles than, you know, just doing paperwork. So that's one way we're striving to improve as a company. Additional technology we added in the past year to enhance our safety capabilities to provide the road supervisors with tablets as well, and that's really used to take accident reports, incident reports, be able to take pictures from sites where maybe the drivers have a tough time turning or dropping off passengers, and they get uploaded to us, and we can provide that feedback to Metro Access and work to a resolution a little more quickly. So that's another area we've continued to try to improve. For I guess our opportunities for improvement, currently our driver goal is 500 drivers between the two facilities. We're currently averaging a shortage of approximately 15%. And you know, we recognize that affects each of you, and we're working to resolve that issue as quickly as we can. We recognize the need to, you know, continue to help improve the overall on-time performance and the quality of service that affects your quality of life as our passengers. We continue to work on improving our recruiting package to attract and retain good employees. And our goal, obviously, is to reach full complement of drivers. Just to give you an example of some of the things, we recently renewed the CBA, or collective bargaining agreement, for employees in Gaithersburg. and included that, we should be focused on our first employee incentive program where the drivers can earn a monthly bonus, and if they earn 3 months in a row, they get a quarterly bonus, which really equates to 50 cents an hour to really help recognize those folks who go above and beyond and provide the service with good safety record, good attendance, and good customer service. So those are the requirements. So we're hoping that will help us get some good results. Additionally, in the past, I would say, year and a half, we've added approximately 13 new staff positions, and they're really to help support the drivers and our other staff so that they can do a good job. Those positions have included HR, safety and training officers, managers, customer service, and additional maintenance staff. We continue to work on driver morale programs each month to really help boost morale, keep the drivers motivated, and give them some additional recognition above and beyond. So we work each day to deliver the quality of service you want, and we're working hard to make sure that we reach our goals for drivers. It's really important for us. It's a key linchpin to deliver the service. And with that, we'd like to say thank you and introduce Shannon, who's going to recognize a couple of our drivers today.
Hello,
all right,
everybody.
So I guess you're doing a Michael Wilson Award with these two drivers.
Correct.
Okay. Go ahead.
So our first driver is from Capitol Heights. His name is Wayne Parcel. He is a current employee with First Transit, who has a total of 10 years with First Group. He started his career with Greyhound back in 2006. Then made a lateral move to First Transit at Capitol Heights. Mr. Hartle has made a great impact on the location. He has won several gift cards and awards for perfect attendance. He was pictured in our monthly newsletter because he is the true picture of a professional driver in uniform. He's had 3 accommodations in the last 8 months, and he's always ready to assist new trainees. When we asked him what he liked most about working here for Metro Access, he replied, "The feeling of knowing that our customers are having a normal life in regards to moving from one location to another." He loves the fact that he can transport the customers and he expects nothing in return. "My joy is knowing that at the end of the day, I was able to provide the best service to our customers." Mr. Hartle has proven to be an asset with the company and has a track record of hard work and dedication. And for these reasons, we'd like to recognize Mr. Hartle. Our second driver being recognized at our Gaithersburg location is Mr. Alex Sese. He's been with First Transit since September of 2016. First Transit is his first job in transportation. Ms. Sese moved to the United States in 2000. Then he moved to New Jersey, where he worked at a local Walmart for 11 years. He worked his way up the ladder there and became a shift manager. After running into a few situations, Mr. Sese moved to Maryland, where he settled down with his wife and 3 daughters. He was referred to First Transit by a friend. Mr. Sese applied for the operator position and was hired. As an operator, Mr. Sese has been a model employee with perfect attendance record of not one day of missed work. He has shown continuous dedication to his customers, job, family, and according to Mr. Sese himself, he appreciates the customers. He stated, "I love what I do to help other people, especially those with disabilities. It is a blessing. It helps keep me going. He is also a joy to have around the office." Mr. Sese will always come to work with a smile on his face, no matter what. He will always find time to stop in and say hello to the management team after ending his shift for the day. He is indeed a great asset to First Transit Gaithersburg. And our intent is to provide those 2 employees with certificates. Mr. Essie will get his tomorrow, and Mr. Hartle will get his on Friday.
Thank you.
Thank you.
fabric in the mechanical area?
Yes.
Can that be transitioned over to above the fan operator where they have the thought of that paperwork? That they can, can it be used in that instance? I don't know.
Not that particular application. The application we use there is directly tied to our maintenance software, which is separate. And allows them to tie into that. On the van itself, Metro Access provides an MDT through which the drivers can do a lot of their transactions. As far as arriving and performing trips, they're still going to have to count cash and do the other, or coupons, where in this case Metro Card's coming.
Primarily, I'm just
talking
about they want their clipboards and they have the paper. Seems like duplication, not duplication, but I don't know exactly.
And it is, it's a duplication of what's in the MDT, but I think that's really our fail-safe to make sure that the driver has the correct information to get to where they're going.
Thank you. Any other committee members that have questions?
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you. First of all, I want to say that my last two rides have been with drivers that you folks employ, and very pleased with them because they seem to be happy together. My question may be beyond the purview of your knowledge, because I'm not sure whether your company actually owns the vans or not. But the concern I have is maybe best put as, how long is the average life of a van? And at what point do you folks, how do you recycle that to get new vans?
Mr. Crawford, I'll answer that for you. I'm Don Scruggs, the assistant director. The vans are owned by Wilando. And the standard life cycle is a minimum of 150,000 miles or 4 years. After that, they're eligible for replacement. The actual replacement cycle often depends upon capital availability and contracting and so forth. But we strive to replace vehicles every 4 years. At this point, we're a little bit behind that cycle, but we do anticipate a little bit over 200 vehicles being introduced into the fleet in the next 4 to 6 months maximum. That is what we're looking to do.
Thank you.
All right. Any other...
I'm curious, how many other urban areas do you do door-to-door service and collect at the door before people go?
We do door-to-door in a number of cities. The policy varies. Some agencies require to collect at the door. Most require so we collect before we move or transport the passenger, especially on the outbound trip, the first trip of the day.
Thank you. Ms. Rush, did you have a question for the
providers? I have a question, but the same thing I said to the other two providers. Want to reiterate how important the drivers are. And I hope that all the companies find a way to keep drivers and know that there is no system without them. If the drivers don't drive, nobody gets around. And so we've got to find a way to keep the drivers and attract the drivers. And I hope that all the companies are starting salaries and benefits that are making them want to stay.
Yeah, thank you. And we have worked on that quite a bit in the past year and a half, and that's certainly our goal as well. We recognize that they're our most important asset really to delivering the service.
Thank you. Ms. Bellamy, you can introduce yourself, and we were talking about First Transit gave their presentation.
I'm Carolyn Bellamy. Sue Bass. live in Montgomery County.
Any other questions from committee members? If not, we thank you for coming for your presentation and also the Michael Wilson Award with the two recipients.
Thank you for having us. Appreciate it.
Now that we have a microphone here available, we can go back around to introduce who's in the audience.
Baker, Metro Access.
Salisa Levin, Metro Access.
Stephanie Thorne, Metro Access.
Janice Fitzhugh, Metro Access. Nicole Murray, Metro Access.
Akane Hinya, Metro Access.
Irvin Fry, Metro Access.
Robbie Worth, Diamond Transportation.
Jen Weber, MTM.
Crawford Brown, MTM.
Albert Freeman, Suitland Brown.
Nicole Miller, Fairfax County.
James Lewis, MD Transportation.
Conrad Marshall, Transit.
Mike Martin, Transit.
Derek Benson, Don Transportation.
David Schaefer, ADA Policy and Planning.
Elizabeth Shaw.
Rodney Neely, Fairfax County.
Mike Rodemacher, MV Transportation.
Bill Williams.
Thank you so much. And of course, Mr. Proctor.
William Proctor, Metro Access.
Thank you. All right, now we can go. Here's Mr. Kent in a minute. Next, we're going to go with our next presentation on smart trip cards. And I guess, who will be doing it? Oh, you'll be doing it. Okay, let's go ahead.
My name is Christopher Colbert. I'm one of the operations managers in Metro's Office of Eligibility, the office that has been implementing the new Metro Access Smart Trip cards that have been mailed out. Some brief information about those cards. They all have been mailed out by the end of January, so by the end of last month. These cards are replacing current Metro Access customers' conditional cards, which are the old Metro Access cards with the all-white background that allow customers to ride bus and rail free of charge. This initiative was put forth to allow autonomous entry for Metro Access customers who ride bus and rail for free, which meant us replacing, I believe, over 22,000 customer cards. So it was quite a large undertaking for us to get that many cards out to everyone. There are actually two cards that were mailed to each of our conditionally eligible customers. The first card was an ID card that is red, white, blue, and silver. It has the Metro Access and Smart Trip logo on it, and is also an ID card with the customer's photo. The second card that was sent out is a Smart Trip PCA card, which stands for Personal Care Attendant, which looks just like a regular Smart Trip card, except that it says PCA on the side. And that card is for the customer's PCA as they travel through the system, through the bus and the rail system with the customer. The way the cards work, if the customer is traveling on bus and rail on their own, they would use only their ID card and they would use it just like a regular Smart Trip. They would tap it to the Smart Trip target in the rail station fare gates or on the buses at the fare machine or fare box as they board the Metro buses. If they have a personal care attendant traveling with them, the customer would tag their card to the Smart Trip Target first, and then the customer's PCA would tag their Smart Trip card directly after the customer does. That does have to happen at the same gate. If you're going through the Metro Rail system, and you have to do that going in and out at the same locations. If that card is not used in tandem with the customer's ID card, it will charge full fare. So they are linked in that way. This card is not good for all of the local jurisdictions, and not all local jurisdictions have or currently honor the free card program. I can give two examples of agencies who are not currently using it. It's the Dash Bus in Virginia, and also MTA, their commuter buses, and also their buses in Baltimore. So if you're using any of those two buses specifically, they will charge you regular fare if you use your Metro Access card. I point that out because as such, if you use the card and you don't have a balance on it and that balance goes negative, then that balance or that card will not work through our system until you zero out that balance. So that is something that is important to know. And that is also the case for the PCA card as well. So if your PCA uses the card on its own and that balance goes negative, that card will not work the next time you use it in the system until you zero out that balance. As I stated before, all cards have been mailed out since the end of last month. So by now, most of our customers should have received those cards. If you have not received that card, we encourage you to visit our office at the Transit Accessibility Center to get a replacement. We did our best to ensure that everyone had updated addresses when we sent this out. By comparing our list of customers to the U.S. Post Office. Even with those efforts, we did have several hundred cards that were sent back to us, so we are keeping those on file in our office so that if and when those customers do arrive to our office, we can just hand it to those customers. The last date of use for the old Metro Access card is February 28th. So as of March 1st, the only card that will be used through the bus and the rail system will be the new Metro Access Smart Trip ID card. And I think those are all the main points that I have to cover. Are there any questions regarding the new Smart Trip cards?
Okay, go ahead.
I just want to know, I have a Smart Trip card, the regular one, with a balance on it. I can still use that, there's no money on these cards right now.
There's no balance on the new Smart Trip ID card, no. It is a zero balance. If you use it in the bus and the rail system, it's not going to charge you anything anyway. You do still have to pay for parking if you use parking through the system, so that, and of course that was the same before as well. But you can use these cards to pay for parking also. So if you have a regular fare Smart Trip card and you use Metro parking, you could hold on to that card and use that card for parking instead. If you prefer also, you are able to transfer the balance from your regular fare Smart Trip card to this new Smart Trip card. You would have to call Smart Trip in order to do that. That number is on the back of the Smart Trip card, and both of those cards do have to be registered in your name before they'll let you do that. I do believe you can do that online as well.
Can you still get money put on those at like CVS?
Yes. You can add value to them at any location that you can add value to a regular Smart Trip card.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right, Ms. Bellamy, make sure your mic is on.
My question is this.
How much time does your PCA have to get through when they're riding the bus or when they're getting on the train? I have a question with how much time has left.
They have 90 seconds, so a minute and a half.
So in some cases, I've seen some PCAs trying to get that person through, you know, on the train. And it takes time, sometimes. What happens if they don't get through in 90 seconds?
Well, if they're assisting the customer with getting through, I don't expect that it would take very long after the customer has tapped their card to the target for them to go right behind them and do that anyway. If, for example, if they're pushing them with a wheelchair, they're literally right behind that customer as they're going through the gate. They may have to let go for a couple seconds while the gate closes. But that elapsed time should not go over a minute and a half.
My next question is, if the customer managed to get through the gate and the person doesn't get through the gate, what in place for that person to get through the gate?
You mean if they don't get through within 90 seconds?
You know, I've seen some cases where the PCA gets discombobulated.
Right, yeah, that would, I would assume that would be up to the station manager to try to help with. The only thing we would have to look at, of course, on our end would be the time spans. When we did this in testing the 90 seconds going through a fare gate with other people also coming and going around you is an excruciatingly long amount of time. We had it in 2 minutes before, and it just seemed impractical that there would ever be an occasion where you would have an entire 2 minutes go by where two people would not be able to get through the same fare gate within that time.
What happens to the Metro Access bus?
Metro Access buses do not accept SmartTrip cards, so the delivery service is not affected by this new change.
I know that, but I'm saying, what if the person does not have a SmartTrip card and they put somebody on the bus, will there be any hesitation about that without the SmartTrip card?
Well, again, For Metro Access service, it is a 100% ID policy. So if the customer does not have their SmartTrip ID, then presumably they would not be allowed to board.
I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's all they would need.
Okay.
Yeah, the customer would not need to show the PCA SmartTrip card.
Thank you. Sure. Go ahead. Before you show this one more hand, go ahead.
Yes, I have a couple of questions actually.
Did Charlie?
People are kind of pushy at these seats, so what happens if someone gets between you and your PCA in trying to get on the, especially I guess with the subway gate? Is it still going to honor that PCA card without charging?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it will.
And part two, I just wanted to warn people I had my picture card and the PCA card, one behind the other, and it somehow went through my PCA card, my regular card, excuse me, and charged my PCA card. And so after that, I couldn't use it to get anyone into the subway because suddenly it was telling me I had a $1.75 deficit.
Right, yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because I meant to mention that also and forgot to. It is very important to keep these cards physically separated when you're going through the system because the way the technology works, it's not it works. It will detect cards through you know, plastic and other things, just like how you can have a SmartTrip card stay inside your wallet and just like your wallet and it go through. It's the same kind of process with the SmartTrip cards as well. Even though you may have your ID card facing the target, it can still sense both going through the plastic of the first. So it is very possible that it could reach, both of them simultaneously, or if it reads the PCA card first, then it will charge that PCA card as well. So it is important to keep them physically separated.
Right, that was what the station master told me, but I just wanted to share with my house.
Yeah, I'm very glad that you brought that up. Thank you.
Thank you. Charlie?
Thank you. I'm one of those people that has a blue card, so I didn't get a smart trip card. I'm glad you answered that question because I was feeling kind of left out. I did go to the march after the inauguration, and we used the subway to go that way. And so I had a person who was given the sighted guide on the way to the subway. And that person was, it was easy enough for me to use the subway if I had somebody that could help me orient to the subway, because that's my problem. I won't get into that, it's just a problem, aneurysm issue. But the thing is that I can use the subway with the assistance of someone else teaching the PCA. So that gives me an idea, why not I get one of these cars too? Is there a way to do that?
Unfortunately, the only way that we're able to make a customer or to determine that customer is conditionally eligible for Metro Access is that we have to determine that that customer is able to take at least one trip on the bus and or rail independently. So if you have just one trip that you're able to do that on, what we would do is we could refer you to our travel training program and set you up with a mobility specialist who could go out in the field with you and basically do an in-field assessment to determine that you are in fact able to take that one trip on your own. Unfortunately, if the only way that you're able to travel is if someone is with you, that is not considered being independent when you travel, and we would not be able to make you conditionally eligible as such.
So, I don't mean to belabor the point, but I do take two trips on my own already, on a ride-on bus, and I'm here, so it's been safe enough. Going on the subway is a different story altogether. So does that make a difference or not?
You said you do that on your own?
Right on, yeah.
That would be an instance where you take it on your own, so we just have to establish that that's the case. So what I can do is I can send a referral to our travel training staff, and they can get with you to just do a basic assessment on that and confirm it, and then we would be able to switch you on your own.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right, Doris, you can introduce yourself and questions for.
Is there a button? No. Right.
It's on.
It's on.
So speak loud. Just.
My name is Doris Ray. I'm a member of the AAC and working in Arlington County and throughout Northern Virginia and living in Fairfax County. And like Charlie, I also represent the. Access Fall Committee of the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. So, relative to what you just said, I would be of the assertion that what you just said, and if that is Metro Access policy, I believe it needs to be reviewed. I think something that you just said about being accompanied by a personal assistant is the only way that you can prove that you can use fixed route and that it has to be independently is a violation of the ADA and ADA rights. And I assert that in the strongest way I can because one is absolutely entitled and allowed by the ADA to have a personal assistant with them on the subway. Just because one uses a personal assistant in policy, it does not for almost anything else, it does not limit you to using Metro Access. It could be other reasons that you are limited. And thirdly, the National Council on Independent Living and other organizations in the disability community look upon a sighted guide or an SSP for somebody who is deafblind, who's traveling with them, to be a personal assistant under the meaning of the law. And I think, and I've asked the chair that we, if necessary, and make a motion if it's necessary, that this policy be reviewed.
Okay, Ms. Ray, let me clarify my comments regarding the PCA. We have at no time stated that a customer cannot use a PCA. As a matter of fact, all of our conditionally eligible cards come with a PCA smart trip card, as I had explained earlier. Now, what I did say is that if a customer exclusively travels on bus and rail with a personal care attendant, meaning that at no time are they able to use the fixed route service on their own, then by definition and by logic, they are not traveling independently. And if they are not traveling independently, then they cannot have a condition placed on their Metro Access eligibility, because there is no point in time where they are able to use fixed route independently.
And I say to you, I heard you say that, and I still contend that it is a violation of the law. And you can ask people on this committee who are represent and or are consumers of Centers for Independent Living nationwide, having any kind of personal assistance with you, for whatever reason, if you need them to ride with you on the fixed route, is not considered not traveling independently. If you need a personal assistant to be with you in travel, whatever it is, and it does not mean that you have a cognitive disability, that should not be assumed. It is definitely traveling independent with a personal assistant, and I think that we should review this policy. I understand what you said from the authority standpoint, but Mr. Chair, if I get a second, I will ask for a review of why this is the policy.
I'll second that for purposes of discussion.
Oh, what did you say, Chairman?
I'll second it for the purposes of discussion.
Okay.
Shall I discuss?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you want to discuss, all I'm asking is a review of the policy. I did not say overturn the policy. I asked for a review of the policy.
Now, Mr. Kim, did you have a comment?
Well, I do.
Yes,
I'm Christian Kim. I'm the Assistant General Manager for Metro's Department of Access Services. I did want to ask Ms. Ray if she might clarify something for me, because I think that what she's getting at is a distinction between the eligibility for paratransit service, which is what our eligibility office is for, and eligibility to use fixed route service, which frankly is open to everyone. I think that what I'm asking is, based on your current understanding of our policy, what exactly is the barrier or the aspect that you consider to be inconsistent with the ADA?
Well, for example, if there are analogies, okay? An analogy could be, for example, if part of Ryan's conditional is because there may be places that I travel where there isn't any accessible route of travel to a bus stop, okay? there are curb cuts, whatever, then I may be conditional to ride in those circumstances, and there may be other things, but am I correct about that? From my understanding,
I believe that's category two, yes.
So maybe I need to travel with a personal assistant on the subway, okay? And maybe sometimes I also travel with a personal assistant on Metro Access for that matter, but nevertheless, when I have the personal assistant, I may be able to travel on fixed route. However, not everybody has personal assistance every day of the week, every moment, okay? So that I may be able to travel alone if I'm traveling on Metro Access, but I may not be able to travel on fixed route unless I have a personal assistant. And that's the kind of thing that I just heard Charlie from the perspective of our disability say. And so consequently, I think there's an analogy, Mr. Kent, and I really think that we should explore how that definition of traveling independently is formed.
I might be able to help with this. Traveling with a guide dog is considered traveling independently, even though you're relying upon the guide dog.
Correct.
Traveling on a subway by yourself is also considered independent, even though you're depending on your eyes. The fact of the matter is, there's always some dependency involved. But the ADA rationale, as I understand it, is a personal care attendant is a person who assists you so that you can be independent.
Yes.
And so, to that extent, the argument is pretty much resolved. The issue becomes whether or not in charging the individual for their riding the subway, it's conceivable that you could say, well, you're traveling independently because you're on a subway, so good, pay the fare. And the PCA doesn't pay the fare because they're the one that causes you to be independent, which I would not recommend doing because they'll make everybody angry. That's the difference. I hope that helps.
Okay, so any other comments or suggestions for this motion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Well, in asking for clarification, I think I got it from Ms. Ray, Mr. Crawford. I appreciate that. I can say this much. I don't think that we're on opposing views on this, because what I would say is that the goal of our eligibility office is to specifically look for all situations where a customer applying for Metro Access can independently ride a fixed route. We are not looking for opportunities to deny access to either the fixed route system or the accompanying free ride benefit. The truth of the matter is most people who apply for Metro Access are going to get it, because the ADA definition is what it is. It is not WMATA's definition. It's the Americans with Disabilities Act definition, and we've been going by that all along. There are some situations where customers have applied for Metro Access where their first inclination is that they want to make sure that they get Metro Access eligibility. So they come into the assessment and they talk a lot about their limitations. With the limitations that they disclose and the limitations that their doctors indicate on the appropriate form, some customers are given full eligibility. And of course, the thing that WMATA obviously does not want to do is to not give eligibility to people who qualify. So we're constrained by that. We need to make sure that if you qualify, you need to get eligibility. So when we grant full eligibility, it is usually only because during the assessment there was nothing discussed or presented that gave the assessor the impression that the individual was going to be able to safely and independently use fixed route transit. Whether that independence is facilitated by a PCA or not. So what happens is people will get the full eligibility and they'll leave. And then they'll discover that the eligibility that they receive does not include the free ride benefit, and then they'll say, hey, wait a minute, that's not what I had in mind. I want Metro access when I need it, and I want the opportunity to use fixed route when I need it. We like that, actually, because when someone is conditionally eligible and they can use fixed route, even if they only use it half the time, Metro Bus and Metro Rail are ready and have a lot of capacity, and especially Metro Rail can get around the traffic. We're happy to see people use the fixed route system. And I'm sure Mr. Colbert can vouch that there have been a number of situations where the customer comes back and says, you know, I did not tell you in enough detail about my independent ability to use fixed route in certain situations. And when the customers come back and provide that information, we don't really argue with them, and they are usually able to secure a conditional eligibility finding as long as the information that they provide is sufficient to demonstrate that. So, you know, I think it's something that it's not so much a policy issue. It's more that because every person gets an individual assessment, a lot of it has to do with what they share when they're in front of the assessment people. And as I said, sometimes people come in and they say, look, I need Metro access because I have a disability, and these are my limitations. And they talk more about that than they do about the fact that they really want to be a multimodal user of public transit. And I think some people are afraid that if they don't talk enough about their limitations, then they won't get eligibility for paratransit service. And, you know, just like a number of you have talked to us over the years about the fear that some people have that the more we promote fixed route transit, they think that we're going to try to take eligibility away from people. And we haven't done that, and we won't do that. But to somebody who's not sure, or maybe a little frightened, you know, they're probably going to keep some of their details to themselves until they feel comfortable. So one of the things that this committee can do, frankly, is to help us really with our relationship with the community to save them. You know, Metro is not going to jump on you if you come forward and you apply for Metro access and say, I need it sometimes. You don't have to tell us that you need it exclusively in order to obtain eligibility for the service. So, you know, some of that I really think is messaging. I hope that answers the question. But, you know, obviously we'll work with the committee as much as we need to on this until you all are satisfied. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Peter, just one other thing about this. I think that for example, people who are blind or deaf blind may not be thinking when they come to an eligibility assessment or whatever about using a sighted guide as the PCA. Okay, and partly that I think is because, and this is actually why they should be eligible, part of why they should be eligible for a sighted guide with them too, is that unlike personal assistance for people with physical disabilities, there isn't a third-party care for somebody who is low income and blind or vision impaired or deafblind. So that if you are low or low income or working class income, you may not have access to an SSP or a personal, a sighted guide all of the time. And you know, it's when you can afford it or you can get a volunteer. Okay, so I think that taking those things into consideration, which are all disability related, that what I'm concerned about, Mr. Kent, and that's why I would hope to at least go forward with some kind of review and possible revision is what I heard was that by definition, if somebody has to accompany you in some way, that or on a fixed route, that you are not considered traveling independently on fixed route, and therefore you get the full eligibility card and are not conditional at all. And so that is a concern to me because I think it wrongly interprets the meaning of the ADA regulations and the ADA itself. And it sounded like to me that maybe you would be in agreement in seeing that, and I'd just like to see some change in how that is applied so that people don't get in a situation where, you know, they are able to agree on the personal assistance.
Okay. Thank you. So we have a motion on the floor. Committee members. So we had discussion from everyone. Can we call the question?
Yes.
For a review. All those in favor of Doris's motion, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays? Abstentions? The motion carries to do the review. Again, we can work with this as on our current work plan. Hopefully you hear that and make a note of that. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, so then, may just so I understand, so then what you're asking for is for staff to come back at a future meeting and from the eligibility office prepared to address the subject of the committee?
Yes, please.
Okay. Well, and I think, I'll say this much, I think the answer to your question is yes. In that I think we want to get clarification and we want to have alignment, I think, with you that we're both saying the same thing. I think we both do, we do not wish to abridge anyone's ability to get the right service from Metro that they oh, sorry. I thought you were giving me hand signals, Mr. Chair. Less, more, something like that. But you know, I think we don't want to abridge anybody's right or ability to get the services they need from Metro. I don't know that we have a policy document that you could read it and go, aha, this is a misinterpretation. It's probably more of a practice and more, you know, our terminology that we're using. But I think to bring closure to the issue, you know, after we have the discussion, staff would be more than willing to produce some statement to the AAC that basically acknowledges the point and confirms that we're speaking in the same terms.
Thank you so much. Now we're going to go on to new business. Denise had an issue that she would like to bring in, then we're going to go into the public comment period once I get the list. It's on, so you can speak directly.
I received a notice today that starting March 1st, the customer service center hours are going to change from 6 in the morning to 8:30. They're going to change to 7 to 8 o'clock. And I got a couple of calls, and I wasn't clear on how to answer them. That's just affecting the centers where you with the Metro or something? It has nothing to do with Metro Access Service, correct?
Stickin's going to answer your question.
That is correct. It is those are the hours for Metro's customer service office, which provides customer service information on rail and bus schedules and also takes complaints, commendations, and that sort of thing. There are absolutely no changes whatsoever to the phone numbers that you call of the services that are provided related to Metro Access.
Yes, the call center remains a 24/7 operation. That will not change. Customers can call in 24/7 to call about their
shutting back. They're closing some of the centers. Is it very clear?
Yes, you have the motion, please.
Where people will not be able to add on or take care of the business that they used to?
Are you speaking about changes to bus routes and railroads?
I'm talking about where you add on your car. Those centers, some of them are going to be closed, correct?
Oh, you mean you're talking about adding fare, that sort of thing?
Yes.
The hours that were reduced, to my understanding, were just the ones in the Metro call center where people call for information. I was not aware that it applied to outlets where people could make purchases of fare media, but we can verify that.
Well, has there been a change in some of the locations where you could make add-ons? Have they closed?
I'm not aware of it. It's possible that it's something that's been brought up as a potential cost reduction item, but there's a difference between the things that Metro has already done, like this change in the call center hours is effective March 1st, but other changes like to service and things out in the community, my understanding is those are still subject to board approval.
Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, Doris.
Just one clarification, and then one thing I want to say on this topic. The clarification is, said something about Metro Access being 24 hours a day. Is the reservation center accepting calls 24 hours a day?
Have not changed their reservation for hours.
Okay. So the only thing I would say, because Ms. Rush brought it up, is that this, for many of us who use fixed route, this change is just another state of art of being able to effectively use fixed route. And I will have to say I'm worried about you, this is when you call up 6377,000. Up until 11 p.m. And despite what was in the announcement to you now, there was talk about how there's been a decline in the use of your enforcement house because they reduced it from 10:30 in the evening or 10 in the evening, whatever it was before, to 8:30. But I'm wondering, Mr. Kent or somebody from Ramada, can you answer the question whether this was in a docket before it was done? And if not, why not?
Mr. Chair, I can certainly look into that. I don't think so, because it's not quite the same thing as the definition in the compact of hours of actual bus or rail service. It's an administrative office function, and I think that's a little bit different. It is an important function, absolutely. I mean, it was a difficult decision.
I'm waiting for a bus at 10 o'clock at night. Well, maybe so I'll have to become a Metro Access user to bring it back to the current topic. Because you're cutting all my service and you're cutting out my way to find out, what alternatives that I have at 9 or 10 o'clock in the evening. So.
Mr. Chair, that's something also that we might be able to bring back some additional information on, not only the effect that this change is going to make, but maybe helping to maybe talk a little bit more about alternatives that people can use for after-hours assistance, because I do think Mr. Ray does make an excellent point that there's still people out using the services after the center has been closed, and maybe we could provide a little bit more information on alternatives.
Thank you so much. And with that said, we're going to move into the customer comment period. Each customer will have 3 minutes. Someone will bring the mic to you. The first person to speak is Nicole Miller. Someone will bring the mic to you so you can speak. 3 minutes.
Hi, I'm Nicole Miller. Thank you for listening to me. I have come to report that things have gotten a little better, and you haven't been keeping me on the band for several hours at a time, and you have been pairing me with other customers that are going in the same direction, and it's getting better. It's not perfect yet, but it's getting better, and it's much more viable for me to be able to get to and from work, and I'm really glad to be able to report that. I would still say that you guys still need to work on your broken links and things in your website, and if I hadn't started coming to these meetings and trying to reach out to Mr. Schaefer, and he's been working, and I think people are giving him the runaround too, but you guys really need to work on this stuff. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Anyone want to respond to that?
Well, Ms. Miller, thank you for telling us that things are getting better on the surface. That we always like to hear that. I will tell you that Mr. Schaefer is a tireless advocate as our ombudsman, and I've personally been sitting with him in meetings where he's been advocating for improvements to the website, the links that you mentioned. You know, when we made that major change to the site, it was a lot to adjust. We're very much aware of the problems, and Mr. Schaefer has been working really hard to make those changes. And he's had my involvement and full support with the IT department trying to get that done. And they have made a lot of corrections to the website, but not all. You know, we have them kind of prioritized by, you know, importance and function. But we will be coming back to this committee each month to kind of give an update on the progress of getting these things resolved.
Mr. Chair, can I ask Ms. Miller what jurisdiction she mainly rides in? Because it would help our
inspector. Oh, I ride in Fairfax County.
Okay. I thought you were.
Thank you. Next person on the list to bring the mic to is Robbie Neely. 3 minutes. My mic is coming to you.
Okay, a lot of you have heard this before, but I would like to know why Metro Access chose, made a specific choice to send out the Metro Access ID cards without providing the appropriate forms of accessible documentation when they send out the ID cards. This is not the first time this has happened. So I'm kind of being a little bit more aggressive about it. I'm sure that everyone knows that this was kind of a violation of part of the Americans with Disabilities Act. And I don't understand if that is the case, why it continues to occur. Nor do I understand why there was no notification on Metro Access, on the Metro Access website. There was no electronic documentation on the website And even today, I couldn't find anything. And I know that I spoke with Mr. Rob, and he promised to put something up there, and it still isn't up there, or at least I couldn't find it. So could someone please address that question? I've noticed I am not asking for Braille documentation right now. I'm just asking for whatever kind of documentation that comes out from Metro Access be put up on the Metro Access website and emailed to customers in an electronic format. This is a cost-effective way of providing this type of documentation and should be done as a matter of course every single time there is a change of this type of scope to Metro Access service.
Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, Chris, I want you to feel free to add, but Mr. Neely, may I ask when you got your cards, have you been able to make use of them yet?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have someone who could read for me, but what happened was I received 5 phone calls from other people who didn't have reader access. And so they asked me to find out because, okay, I'm a transportation nerd, as you know, I like transportation. So I'll go ahead and do whatever's necessary to find the information out. But not everyone has that capacity, and it should not be expected to have that capacity. And I know, for example, that you have my email, and I never got any kind of electronic notification about how to use the access card, the new identification cards electronically. And while I'm going to figure it out, there are lots of people who won't.
Understood. Thank you, Mr. Neely. I was going to ask the eligibility office to comment on this because we do have, and I know Ms. Reyes has talked with this committee and the staff about this for years, that we have amassed a database of people's email addresses, which isn't all customers, but it's a lot of them, that we're able to use. We also have a Metro Access e-alert system that sends a broadcast out to all the subscribers, giving them information. But in this rare instance, and I say, Rodney, since we've known each other for a long time, that you know no good deed goes unpunished, because this is, in fact, the first time that we ever sent out 30-plus thousand smart cards to our customers to say, go have fun on Metro. And that's an awful lot of mailing to do. We had to get the cards into people's hands. And then to try to coordinate that mailing with the people who also have their preference indicated as being, emails, their preferred means of communication, was a lot to coordinate in the time that we had available. But I think since you raised the point, and I know the committee's interested in this, it might be something when we come back to talk with you about the eligibility policy that Ms. Ray raised, we might also use that opportunity to talk with you a little bit about how we intend to make use of electronic communication to the customers who have provided their email addresses to us for communications in the future, in the event that the committee wants to give us further guidance on how to handle that.
One other very important thing that's going to come out soon enough, and I might as well go ahead and just let you guys know about it. A lot of blind people were pretty upset because they couldn't tell the difference between the two cards just by feel. And that's just something to think about for next time.
Also a very good point. Thank you, Mr. Neely.
Yes, and Mr. Neely, I just want to add to that last comment about the ID cards. That was something that was very difficult for us to be able to do because we were dealing with a contractor and sending out so many cards. Going forward, though, any ID cards that are coming out of the Office of Eligibility here, we do have the ability to add Braille to those cards so that customers can differentiate them. We can put the customer's ID number, expiration date, what the card is used for on that card so that you can differentiate. But because of the large number of cards we were sending out, it was very difficult for us to be able to target that number of people within our 25,000 customers that we're sending these out to.
All right, Doris, very quickly, we have a list of customers speak.
Either by consensus, or by motion, I would like there to be an update on how WMATA proposes to provide alternative formats in the requested form that a consumer provides when they are doing their assessment, and how we are going to go forward quickly to resolve this issue, which has been there for years, and as Mr. Kent has rightly said, we have had other customers and representatives from jurisdictions, and particularly the chair of the Fairfax Area Disability Board, the Fairfax Area Disability Services Board, who brought this to our attention on several occasions. So I think this needs to be put up as high priority, and I hope that will be by the end of the committee by consensus, but I thought the report is emerging.
Let us table it until after customer comment, then I'll come back to discuss that.
No,
I want to get these customers through. Thank you. Billy Armstrong?
You call.
If someone brings the mic over to her, please. 3 minutes.
That, I'm not the first. I have two people that I'm reading from their notes, so I don't know where my name got it from. One is the Main Road 7375 from Maryland.
Oh, okay. They told me no for okay.
It all should right, be in that order.
Oh, okay. But I asked those people who were commenting, they told me no. Okay, I'm sorry. So, is the Main Road here?
I'm here for her because she could not make it. So, this way, this is her time, and she's a client, and you can see her money.
All right, 3 minutes for all this.
Her mother takes her Monday, Wednesday, Friday to dialysis. They have to come all the way from out in Maryland to pick her up at the Capitol, because they do not get her to her dialysis on time. For instance, Friday, they picked her up late. She got off. She didn't get a full treatment. And then they were to pick her up at 7:30. To take something wrong. Oh, okay. They were supposed to pick her up between 7:30 and 8. They picked her up after 8. She could have had a full dialysis treatment if they had been on time. Today, on the February 21st, her pickup in the morning is 5:15 to 5:45. Her appointment time was 6:45. They had two people on the van going two different directions, which she said she would have made it on time, but they went and picked up two more people, which made her late again. Here's a young girl who has plenty of problems that I admire her, because she shouldn't actually be living it because of her determination. But the things that you all are doing, this is all, and I'm not going to read all of this, this is how many times you all just leave her. Sometimes patients have to take her home, because if they didn't, Metro's not there, and the people at the dialysis tell them that we can't wait for you any longer. No matter what time she calls, they will tell her they will be there later. They was had her waiting for a van that was supposed to be a few minutes at the dialysis that was coming from Gaithersburg. Now, the reason I'm bringing some of these people in, because I used to bring it up, that things that I heard, but I decided I'm going to start bringing you names and accounts, but you just can't keep treating people that are sick and go home with a good conscience. I don't understand. And why do you have a young girl that has a script? The scripts don't work. Every time I'm on a van with somebody, they are fussing, and they're on the script, because they are picking me up when this person should have been at work. And her mother should not have to leave her house to come pick her up all the way from Maryland to D.C., and then hope that they pick her after her dialysis. But just think, dialysis is important. And for her to cut her treatment short, that does not make sense at all. And something needs to be done. After I heard what Nicole Miller said, She and the other girl could be writing the same thing, so maybe you can straighten her situation out without writing.
Next person.
Sharon Bill is sick and tired of being sick and tired, she says. She's on the script. I end up riding with her all the time because most of the time she's already late. And she wants to know what, if anything, if you're going to have a script to guarantee that they're going to be picked up and get to work on time, because you all do not help us when we have to take our leave. That's our money. Every time we need leave, say, one time at 6:23, 6:53, the driver arrived, 6:34. We went en route to my job. Dispatch called the driver. She was around the corner from her job, made them come all the way back uptown to pick up a client, took the client to the job, and made her late. She says, I'm always sitting in the lobby with the security guards, past my time, watching everybody get picked up, vans go back and forth, and a lot of times she has to catch a cab when she has money in the easy pass. That's just these two. Now for me, if you want to start it over.
Okay, way. Thank you. So go ahead, Ms. Armstrong, 3 minutes for your personal comments.
First, I'm a person. I can't stand to see people do people wrong. They can't really speak up for themselves. And I don't believe in complaining without trying to do something. That's why I come to this meeting, to see what, if anything, you all will try to do to help the clients that are paying for a service that they're not always getting. Even the drivers, you give them a manifest. They wipe the manifest out, send them all over the Timbuktu. The dispatchers lie to you all day long. They're around the corner. They'll be here this time, making you late for you all night. I don't understand. It's a good service, but somebody needs to be fired or trained or to tell people how this business used to run, needs to be run now. And if it's out of control, then you know. Do a riff like the government. When they're sick and tired, they get sick and tired. Anything wrong? Because I just feel disrespected when people are talking. When I'm talking, I'm thinking they should be listening so they can help me out with this situation. But okay, why do we need the new cars? I don't understand. When our regular cars work with the PCA, to me that looks like it couldn't have been cost effective because you had to make a whole lot. But you know, I haven't been here in a while. One time I made my appointment with the scheduler late, and one time I was cut off, so I would take anything when it's at 4:30, because I know if they try to transfer me, I might get cut off. And I accepted one time a $6.50 that I've never paid in my whole time with Metro Access to go home. Ever since I had accepted that one time, $6.50 comes up all the time. So I have to play games, trying to find the time. And I don't care what it is, to get back to my normal fee, which is usually $3.50 and $4.50. And this investigation that they said they have done, that I should pay it. No way, Jose. I will not pay $50. I don't care what time I gotta leave early. And why would it just come up? And the last few months after I accepted it one time, it just does not make sense. And I don't understand, what investigation do you do? If I can give you all the time for years, I've never paid $6.50, except for that one time, and now it keeps popping up. So something needs to be done, because I am not going to pay $6.50.
Thank you so much for your comments. Would you like to address?
Well, thank you for your comments, Ms. Armstrong. Let me answer them in order, as I recall them. The first person that you talked about, the poor young lady that's going to dialysis, I'd like to get the customer ID number so we can see exactly what is going on with her trips. We do have a lot of customers that are obviously in dialysis treatment, and we always try to do our best to watch their appointments and watch when they're being picked up. If she ever gets into a situation where she has to, or she needs more time in dialysis, we can certainly extend her time over there and do an NST trip to bring her home. However, making sure that she gets to her appointment on time is obviously very critical for us. So I'd like to get that information and see what we can do to help flag her trips and improve it. With the second customer that you mentioned to us as well, that's having problems getting to her work on time, or even worse, seeing us bypass her work.
Both of
them. Seeing as a bypass where they're supposed to be dropped off to pick up someone else again, I'd like to be able to research that and see what's going on. Is that happening at about 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning, you were saying?
I know she needs to be there at 6:45, so her time is usually, I think, 5:15 or 5:45.
Right. Okay, so I'd like to see exactly what is going on.
I want to make sure that I know that she has enough time, just like where I said it just happened. If they had taken her, even with the two people on the van, which was two different directions, right after that, she would have been to work on time. But they went to get two other people.
I understand. So if we could do this after this meeting, if I can get the particulars from you, especially on the days that this occurred, so we can take a look at it and see what we can do to do corrective action here.
Don't you all have somebody monitoring these trips since we complain about it every month so they won't keep coming up?
We do our best to monitor as many trips as possible, and especially when a customer brings up a concern here at the meeting, we do monitor the trips as well and see what's going on so we can see what we can do to improve it.
Okay.
In most cases, we're able to improve it. Sometimes we do have challenges.
Yeah, let's see what that.
Okay. I wish everything was perfect, but we do try our best with this. In regards to your fairing issue as well, you mentioned that's happening at about 4:30 in the afternoon when you're calling?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And does it have to do with the time that you're trying to schedule the trip?
Same time. I've been leaving for years, and all of a sudden when I accepted that 1-6:50, because I was afraid to when they said, okay, we have tried two times, we have to change you to another scheduler, and I was afraid because one time when I was sent over to another scheduler, I was cut off, so I didn't want to take that chance, so I accepted the 6:50, and that has been around ever since.
I understand, and it sounds like, too, you're booking it right about 4:30 in the afternoon. It shouldn't affect your fare, but we'd like to look at that. If I can make another suggestion as well, sometimes if you call about a half hour earlier or over 45 minutes earlier, you might, the reservation has a little bit more time. It's not going to affect your fairing, but it helps you.
Right, so
I call Dave.
After the meeting ends also?
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you.
Wait a minute. What about my other one about them wiping out the driver's schedule once you put the schedule and then you're almost clear because manifest?
I can talk to you about that after the meeting as well.
Okay.
Thank you. Sandra, if I'm saying correctly, Simmons or Starnes?
Simmons.
Thank you. 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you. So I'm sure you got, good afternoon. I'm Sandra Starnes, and I'm sure you guys are definitely getting tired of hearing from me. I guess that I will say it this way. It's a twofold situation. In terms of, you know, the Metro Access driver destroying my property, my note taker, so I was able to go through the process, but through each step, it was totally inaccessible. From the beginning to the end, to, okay, we've made a determination that you can't prove that this person broke your stuff because you can't see, you don't know who else was around to witness it. And what I keep hearing is, well, we're going to provide you this when we can find an accessible format. Okay, but you've known that I'm visually impaired for as long as I've been a customer of Metro Access. So the difficulty, I will never understand the difficulty in terms of providing documentation in an accessible format. That is not too hard, it is not too difficult, but yet when I make that request, it seems to be clearly beyond what you're willing to do. In addition, okay, my trips are not substantially better, despite the fact that they are being monitored. In fact, to be told, they're worse. I've gotten completely stranded one day. Last week, I waited for 30 minutes, and I was losing my voice, so I simply could not wait any longer. I exceeded the window. I'm standing there, no ride. I reach out to folks, and I say, well, they're being monitored. Shouldn't they get better? Oh, well, you don't understand. Some people, it's even later than you, and yours have gotten better. No, actually, they haven't. I've decreased my trips that I've taken, and so therefore, the numbers are down. So theoretically, things have gotten better. But in truth, they haven't. And I guess I'm just well and truly frustrated with the continuing lack of accessibility, lack of respect, lack of professional treatment, and it seems not to be a problem that I keep getting either not picked up at all or picked up when people feel like they're gonna show up. And I really have a problem with this on several levels.
Thank you. Who would like to address our concerns?
Can I ask where the customers from, please, or where they're riding?
So, hi Doris. I reside in Montgomery County. The trips have been all over Montgomery County, PC, into PC. It just sort of depends on where I'm going.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Who would like to respond, Mr. Staff?
Ms. Evans, I'm Don Scruggs. I'll follow up with you after meeting on the claims issue.
So, yes, Ms. Sermons was absolutely correct on the process, and for that we did apologize to her. I took a personal initiative to provide a reasonable accommodation throughout the claims process. The process actually has been resolved, and the decision has been made and has been relayed to Ms. Sermons. As I was speaking to the AGM and yourself, outside of the claims process, that's a different matter, but as far as Metro's claims process is concerned, that issue has been resolved at the highest of possible levels at the moment. But yes, in terms of the accessibility, we've heard it from the service tonight and the other gentleman in the back. We do have the capability of knowing who our customers are, what their disability is or are, and we do need to be much more aggressive. AGM said we're going to have to talk as a team on how we make sure we identify these customers when communicating for any purpose, claims, new cars, what have you. So that's definitely something that we're going to take as a serious initiative going forward. But yes, in terms of apologize for the initial communication you received from Metro, that wasn't proper. But as you know, I did walk you through as a reasonable accommodation through the claims process. And that matter, again, has been resolved in terms of Metro's policy in responding to such claims.
Thank you. And
in regards to your trips, Ms. Sermons, again, I'd like to speak to you after the meeting and see exactly what is going on. I am aware of a couple of issues that happened over the past couple of weeks that I'd like to go over with you as well and get some clarification on. And I do have a young man sitting right beside you as well to get some information from you as well.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Next person on the list is Derek Benson from the Diamond Transportation. 3 minutes.
My name is Derek Benson, and I'm speaking from a driver's perspective. I've picked up just about every client in here, and in doing so, heard more horror stories than you guys probably have heard. But my main concern is knowing that the professionalism that we have and have got to show, even hearing from this lady over here, Billy, saying that being afraid, The 5-minute window, a lot of clients are actually afraid that a driver will leave them instead of getting their second calls. Have to even ask them when they say that, you know, they're going to be no-show. Did you get a second call? Did somebody say anything about a second call? Did your phone ring? Anything? There are a lot of great things that this service does for clients. There are a lot of things that are lackluster. It's not always about trying to get more money for a driver. It's just that a lot of drivers, I don't know if they take the job serious enough to always use the MDT as an almost like, I hate to say the word, even use it as an excuse instead of knowing the city. A lot of places that clients go, they should know. They should know how to get there. They should know where traffic is and how to avoid it. Kenilworth Avenue 295 is always busy from exactly 6:15 up until, and with construction going on right now, up until 11:30 in the afternoon. If you know how to come down Central Avenue and avoid that, if you know how to go around the Beltway, if you know how to use GW Parkway, if you know how to use different routes and not just say, well, the MDT or the Ranger, because a lot of clients can tell you, the exact quote is, take you around Robin Hood's barn, if I'm not mistaken. And they know these things. And if they try to express themselves to a driver and tell them that they know a different route, a lot of drivers will tell them that they must listen to the Ranger or things of that nature. If their manifest gets wiped out and we get add-ons, as Mr. McAtee said earlier, things to streamline the add-on or the additions, there are a lot of things that can make us as drivers be better, to make Metro look better. We just need the tools and maybe even the initiative to try to learn the city. A lot of clients know that when they first get on the van, I ask them exactly, I start giving them a description as to where we're going so that they can tell me, well, you just need to make this turn here or this turn here and not just shut up and let me do my job. That's the one thing that no client wants to hear. And I don't believe that any able-bodied person would want to hear somebody tell you, look, just shut up and let me do my job.
Thank you.
We're not fixed right. We are flexible.
Thank you.
We're supposed to be flexible.
Thank you, sir, for your comments. All right, last person on the list, since he's been quiet, he can introduce himself. And Mr. Sheehan, do you have any words this week? Introduce yourself.
Pat Sheehan, Silver Spring, Maryland, and then we'll go back to Doris. And I just have one question at this time.
Oh, okay. All right. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I want to piggyback on, sorry I forgot the young lady's name, but about the 650, I've been complaining about that, and they researched it, and I was told last Friday that because of the smart track, all the DC to DC trips are 650. And no, that's not true, but that's what I was told. And I've been paying that every day for a couple of weeks or so. 650 no matter where I go. The only deviation today was coming from my job to eat, it was 4:30. But it's 650 to go home, DC to DC. And I think that's very unfair because DC has less subway stops and the way that the system is actually set up in different jurisdictions within the district. You have to catch the bus or whatever, so they don't really give you an explanation about double fare because you're confused. So I'm not for this committee to get to the bottom of that DC to DC 650. Also, this morning, the driver was late, but the driver did try to find me. I leave notes in there and get lost all the time. I've been in the same place for 17 years. And I've used Metro Access a lot within all that time. And they still cannot find, it's been a different driver every day. And for some reason, I'm always the add-on, so the driver doesn't have the advantage of having the notes that are in the system so that they can easily find my location. The other thing I want to complain about is I've rearranged my time 50 times to try to get to work on time so that I won't be late every day. And it's kind of working out now because I advanced it to about an hour or so before I'm actually doing work, but I'm still late two times out of the week. And I have to pay the fee, just like everybody else. The third thing is, this morning I was picked up, and as I got on the van, my trip was dropped. So the driver said, oh, they dropped a trip. So I gave her directions, and I used my cell phone to call. And when I called, they left me on hold. I let them know that I was already on the vehicle, but it had been dropped, so the driver could not perform the trip. And when I got to my destination, she couldn't say that, the trip had been performed successfully. So, it's been lately a lot of ridiculous problems, and people complain all the time the same issues. So we have to do something about this. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, quick question, then I'm going to go back to what we discussed earlier and then close the meeting.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me that trips would be $6.50 in the district. Could you share some of those trip times with Wamana so that we could run the numbers, because you would think that you would be going, particularly with Safetrack, bus to bus, which would be cheaper than rail. So, I would think it would be cheaper than $6.50. Could you do that for us? Because having specific instances where it was $6.50 charged, when my intuition tells me it should be less, it would be great to have the data. Also, let me sneak in a request. Did we get some on-time performance for the last month?
Oh, yes. As I looked through here, I know we were running on an average of 83% for the last, I believe, 5 months.
Right.
For this past month, as I'm looking at it right now, on-time performance.
Can I ask a question about this little bit?
What?
Can I ask a question about this little bit?
I'll go ahead, Mr. Avery. What's the on-time performance this month? Because I know it was at 83%.
Yeah. It's 86.9 for December, and that's about a 3 percentage point improvement over the last time we discussed this. And also, this is in light of the fact that with the mild temperatures, ridership has been on a consistent increase, where by this time ridership should have fairly well dropped out. So what that means is ridership has been consistent, and there is a slight uptick in OTP performance since we last discussed.
All right, very good, thank you. All right, now Doris, we were last discussion, you have the last word here on the discussion about test performance. Now, what do you want to bring up?
Well, what I'd like to see is a report back from staff, and I believe that when Mr. Neely brought this to the AAAC, that we did have a motion to put this on the agenda. I was reminded, I think 2 minutes ago, because I put forth the motion, but if it needs to be a new motion, I would like to see it happen relatively quickly. Certainly in the next 90 days, I would like to see a plan brought back, as I appreciate Mr. Blake's comments about the ability to identify people's requests for alternative formats. And since it is an ADA Title II issue, which for a program for people with disabilities has a higher requirement for providing accommodation that is requested, and one does not have to request every single time something that happens, for example, particularly with provision of documentation for a program like Metro Access, that I think we need to see some plan for correction, and I don't just mean providing only electronic media, but rather be a requested alternative format by the customer. So can that be done? Does it have to be done by a motion?
No, I'm presuming this would be going to the AAC agenda item, Pat. All right, so this would be at your agenda as a full committee.
No, but I think it was referred here.
Oh, it was referred to.
I believe.
Certainly a recommendation from the subcommittee to the full committee. I think we've seen that. We've had that. So, and I would request that we have it on the full committee as an agenda item as a reasonable accommodation for what we're going to do in the future, so that we don't have this issue.
Well, has it been
over and over again? Mr. Neely has brought that to our attention, but. And 13 years that I've been attending the meeting, we're still at the same spot.
And the official words of Phil, go ahead, Doris, and make the motion.
I make the motion what is it you're wanting to say, Pat, that there be a report from staff? I'm not clear what you're saying, how we should handle it.
So you're looking for a process by which individuals, when programs like this come out, that they get notified in the format that they notified them.
Well, no, I'm looking for a process to utilize the information that is collected at eligibility certification and recertification for alternative formats so that alternative formats are automatically provided upon the consumer's initial request for this, so that could be the absolute absolute. So, but I'm saying there's been some confusion on this policy, and at one time, outright, it was said that people have a request every time for a service like Metro Access and other services. I see this procedure through other Title II entities, for example, in Fairfax County, on commissions and boards, once you make the request and they know you're coming every month, they provide alternative formats right up front. And that is an ADA provision, particularly for a service that's dedicated to people with disabilities. You know, it's something like coming to a lot of board you don't know necessarily when people are going to come, but something like this should be automatic. So that's why I say audit for all. That there be a procedure for automatic distribution of alternative formats and implementation process.
All right. That just sounds like a motion for session. Darnese?
I would second the motion if it really is. They want to know a report on the administrative procedures utilized to ensure that persons get the alternative format they requested.
All right. Discussion. Then we only got 5 minutes left.
I call.
All right. All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays? Abstentions? Okay. Motion carries. So, Paul, that motion will go to the full committee, right? What would you say?
If that motion goes to the full committee.
Yes.
Well, report out to the full committee.
Yeah.
We'll report out as to how to implement it.
But if the next 90 days.
Mr. Chair, if I could just ask, you know, staff understands the nature of the issue that you're discussing, because we were all discussing it with you many times before. We understand and agree with you that it is a reasonable thing to ask for. I don't really have a good reason or a good excuse, I think, for us not having it by this point, other than to tell you that anything that we do administratively here requires staff. And I do want to remind this committee that, you know, we respect you and we respect the advice that you give, but please keep in mind that while we're sitting here talking with you about all the things that we need to do to make Metro better, that we are also going through a lot of reductions. There's reductions of staff, quite a few staff positions being eliminated. The budget is very, very tight. And I'm not saying, and I want to make sure Ms. Brady hears me on this, I'm not saying that just because the budget is tight that we are going to say we can't afford to do things that are required. That's not what I mean. I'm just saying that we have a lot of requirements that we have to comply with, and we try to address them in priority order. Always the ones that have to do with Metro Access Service being provided to as many people as possible is the first one. And we have had a difficult year. We've had some short resources. Some of the customers have come and talked about service issues that they have had. And we've been working, you know, through most of 2016 to try to restore better service out there. And while we are working on that, WMATA is dealing with dwindling resources. So I just simply want to say that to you, that when you ask us to do something like this, like, you know, can WMATA staff come back and talk about how we can make sure in the future that if you are a customer who asks for your materials in accessible format, how can you get it that way? I think one of the things that would help you to get there is to ask us to come back and tell you what we have in place now. Because it's not like we're not wanting to do it. I think it's more what we should do, in my opinion, is report to you what we think the steps are to get there. And then you can evaluate whether you agree with us or not. You can certainly issue the report, but that's what I'm asking for.
All right.
I said for a plan, an implementation plan.
So, yeah.
Well, are you asking us to come with this plan or to work on a plan with you? That's what I'm saying.
Mr. Cameron, I think working on a plan with us, mm-hmm. because I see where you're coming from an agency perspective. And so, for instance, very specifically with this particular contract, if there was contract language in the contract that said when the cards go out to people with disabilities, that the appropriate format for those persons with disabilities would be provided. Now, that may be a possibility, but of course you would then have to factor that into the cost of the public contract, let's say, something like that. So I think that it is I think it's something that we ask for, but I certainly think that we need to be able to provide examples of what we want, and when we want it, and what formats we want it in. And you have to go back and run the numbers and say, okay, we have X amount of dollars, we can provide this, this, and this.
We only have 1 minute left. So I just want to say, this is a civil right. And accessible formats is very civil right, and if you hadn't stopped me, I wouldn't hesitate in my mind, okay? And the ADA says there is no cost fund for something that is a civil right. For example, physical access is a civil right, so is information access. And so this has been going on for years.
And Mr. Chair, let me just say, we understand that, and I think what Mr. Sheehan was getting at is that in evaluating the cost, there's more than one way to comply with the regs. So what we want to balance is, can we find the most cost-effective way to do it right? And that's why we would like to go over it with you. Rather than, we don't want to do it and just say, well, here's the plan. We'd like to come to you and say, here's what we were thinking, and tell you why, and give you a chance to comment.
All right, Dr. Bell, any last words?
I have one question. I want to know whether the white bulbs have been put out there. I've heard it been thinking a thousand times.
The answer is yes.
Where are they?
They're in the system that they're in the Metro Rail system right now.
Okay.
Not on buses yet, but they are in the Metro Rail system.
So I can go to any Metro system and ask, see a white bulb. And they know what to do.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Motion to adjourn.
Second. This subject needs to be continued.
Thank you. Motion to adjourn. All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.